Welcome back in, Brent Rollins, David Pollack. We're going to talk some college football like we keep doing. And here's the thing that's fun, Brent, that I love is there's always something to talk about. Every week we're like, what are we going to discuss? And then all of a sudden Matt Rhule goes, hey, we might not have a spring game. And not only does Ohio State lose their DC the week before, and then they lose their OC. And wait, there's more. Alabama hires a new OC. And we're going to talk about Tennessee moving forward, who's a lot of Tennessee fans think they're really underrated. So plenty to talk about in college football always. It's a never-ending cycle. It's beautiful.
Very much so. But first, I actually want to get your opinion on something because I know you're an NBA fan.
Love NBA.
What did you think of the Luka Doncic trade?
I thought it was fake. I did not think it was real. Now, listen, I have friends that are in the NBA, and one thing that always came up the last couple years, that two people, and I wonder if you could guess them, two people in the NBA that did not work very hard and that never lost a party when they went to the city.
So Doncic was one.
Doncic is one.
My second thought would be Embiid, but maybe it's James Harden. I don't know.
James Harden. 100% James Harden. I heard the curfew was not always tight. I heard that there was plenty of extracurriculars. How about, remember when Doncic won the Western Conference and he's got that beer? He's got the beer can and he's popping it, and somebody walks up and is like, nah, bro, cut it out. Like, hey, give me the beer. Like, not now. We are in season. Like, we got more to accomplish. Like, you can't do that. Stop. Put that away.
No, I was shocked. But it's one of those, I honestly went to kind of conspiracy Brent.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you only end up calling the Lakers? But yeah, it was very odd, needless to say.
Well, one thing that you always know about trades, talking with all these insiders for all these years and stuff too, is the team that's trading knows the most about these guys. Like, they have the intimate details into the work ethic. They have the intimate details into the extracurriculars. Like, obviously, Doncic is his play speaks for itself. Like, he's a savant. He's freaky. His defense leaves a lot to be desired. But obviously, there's something about him in the background that the Mavs were saying, I'm going to trade a 26-year-old in their prime that's a top five NBA player. Like, that doesn't add up. It seems kind of crazy, and especially for what they got for him. Cause you feel like, man, you've seen all these trades with like 16 number ones, and now that madness happens. So that's not why we're on the show, but I love the trade because you knew good and well, I'd have an opinion.
Yes, I knew you would. So that's why I asked. But now, speaking of other things that you have an opinion about, Matt Rhule, you mentioned him talking about potentially getting rid of the spring game, and because of what it does and it allows other teams to see his players' thoughts.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Now, listen, Nebraska sells out their spring game and it's fantastic. And their atmosphere is one of the best in the country. They're really good. Their fans are unbelievable, but it is absolutely a disadvantage because teams are scouring this. They're scouring your tapes to try to find guys to add to their roster. And that spring window, like, is a big window. So the fact that you're developing and putting all this into these guys and you're like, he leaves? I mean, it's frustrating. So I would expect a lot of people to follow suit. Like, this is the first – they're probably the trendsetters of this. And I think more to follow because of the frustration with some people in their rosters.
Well, Lane Kiffin last year did they just played games or something, right? They did like dunk contest or
Lane is fantastic at culture, by the way. Like, Lane is one of the true believers, one of the few in college football that I really align with in one avenue. Like, Lane believes in fun. Like, I think that's a missing element. There's a lot of coaches that have a lot of gifts and the ability to develop and do the different things, but man, fun is really cool. Like, fun makes you not want to leave. Fun makes you enjoy your day-to-day grind. You're already asking me to do a whole lot, but you're going to get more of me when I just get those days where I get to kick it. So I thoroughly enjoy Lane's approach to that and his Twitter and taking shots at people. And it's just, I'm here for all of that. I'm good with it.
So speak, what about the old school guys, one that's local here to us, Kirby Smart, who's every day like that's an opportunity to get better. And I'm it's a part of the grind, like all those kind of things. How do you think that does that old guard stay true to that or no?
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. Like I can have a lot of fun and also ride your butt. And like, that's where I think you, and Kirby said this about the national championships. He said what he finally figured out was, and they did the 1+1=3. And that was one of their big slogans and sayings. What Kirby figured out was, I got to get these guys away from football, away from the building, and I got to get them having fun and not always being such a grind and such, because these kids are a little bit different. And I think he'll tell you, man, once he learned that to get them away, not to have team dinners and have fun, but not at the building, like get away from the building where you're always grinding and you're always doing the hard things. And now, go to the movies and find different ways to enjoy your time and enjoy each other. Because when you get to know each other, man, and you're why, the other person's why, like Reggie Brown, man, I'll never forget when that dude got in the hot chair at Georgia when I was there and he told the whole team his why. And I was like, holy cow. Like, he talked about his dad. He talked about how his dad struggles with Alzheimer's. And like, he talked about his why. That's why he goes so hard, because every play is a new chance to make a new impression. Like, you don't think that lights you up, Brent? Like, you're ready to run through a flipping wall. And I know why Reggie Brown tries so freaking hard. Like, now I know why that guy's fighting so hard. I got to help him. I got to do a good job to help him accomplish his goals. And so I don't think they have to be, one and not the other.
Well, what about, I'm more so about the spring game at least, though. What is someone who's sort of old guard? Hey, the spring game, I want the game. I want it in. I want to see what the light's on. I want to see, that sort of rank. Or is everybody just going to fall in line and be like, yeah, it's okay. I'll have my normal practices and scrimmages, but the TV just won't be broadcasting it.
Yeah, I don't think the TV broadcast changes much, because for these scrimmages, like you're getting graded. Like, for y'all don't know, like, you get graded on every play, and you sit with your coach and you literally like, look at this play. Like, do you see your hands? Do you see your technique? Do you see your assignment? Do you see your hustle? Like, you are absolutely 100% getting graded. So I think all of those grades matter. And here's the thing I've learned as a coach and I've learned as an analyst all these years. Like, if you don't do it in practice, I don't trust you.
Yeah.
Like, because again, in the game, when it really matters and it's go time, like, I want to go down with the guys that I know give me all they have, not the guys that have insane talent. And I think that's why some people get frustrated. Why don't we see the young guy? Why don't we see the young guy at corner this year? Like, why don't we see the young guy here? Because I have to trust you. I have to know you're going to know your assignments. I know you're going to go balls to the wall. Like, And that's built in practice. That's built with reps. That's built throughout the spring, throughout weight training, checking all these different boxes, man, that make me go, I trust you. If I lose, I can go down with you. There's some people, man, that I can't go down with because of their work habits, because of they're not going to give me all they have. And I'm not really excited about putting you in the game, even though I know your talent might be here. Like, it might be far superior to the guy that's in front of you. But there's a comfort level with that, I think, that you can't argue with as a coach, because it's every day in practice.
Yeah, and it's like, hey, you're gonna, when the lights come on and it's a game and there are fans in the stands, all of a sudden now you're gonna give that max effort versus what you did in practice. I get that very much so. But I think this is a bigger issue, and it relates to the schedule. It relates to even the longer playoff, how multiple transfer portal windows. Like, there's teams that are, their spring games are, I think, after the spring portal window closes, kind of thing. Like, there's all sorts of, this is a part of a bigger thing. The reason why coaches are sort of shying away from this as much as anything, which stinks. And it's the nature of the beast.
They're leaving and going to the NFL.
So look at you and your television transition skills there. Pretty good. Chip Kelly got a bag.
By the way, we talked about this a week ago, and I said, Brent, like, don't be surprised if Chip Kelly's next, because again, the grind of college football. He chose to get out of the head coaching gig spot because he wanted to be done with it. He went with Ryan Day because he was high school team, or he coached Ryan Day in college. Previous relationship. I think he wanted to go help him get to exactly where he got, get him over the hump. Fantastic. Now, Oakland Raiders give you a bag. And by the way, God bless America. Like, good for you, Chip Kelly, getting it. Listen, Chip's proven at every level he can coach, right? He's proven at the college level. He's proven at the pro level. You know, he hasn't had crazy success as a head coach. He's had good success, and he's been a really good head coach, a solid head coach. But offensively, the scheme versatility you saw with Ohio State, man, like, that's not normal. Like, what he did with that squad and transitioning, you better know football, man. You better know how to teach it. You better know how to explain it. You better have a backbone to stand behind it, because you can't just say, hey, this is our playbook for the first 8 weeks of the season, 10 weeks of the season, and throw it out and be like, yeah, we're just going to do this. Like, you better have some onions to be able to do that. And Chip always has. Like, always loved that cat. So good for him getting a big time raise and going now where he can just go coach ball. No egos, no none of that other crap. And interesting, you know, a year with Will Howard. Does that name come up for the Oakland Raiders? I think all those
Vegas Raiders. Come on, get it right.
Yeah.
Get it right. Vegas Raiders. You're going old school there. But also it is funny and sort of ironic in a way that his head coach is Pete Carroll. And those guys used to battle it out in the old Pac-12, Pac-10, Pac-12.
How old is Pete Carroll now? Is he 100 yet?
70-ish, 71, right around 70, something like that. But, yeah, Ohio State's two coordinators will be making $9 million, basically, next year to coach at, one, their rival with Knowles at Penn State, and then, two, Kelly with the Raiders. So do you think that in any way – says anything negative, and Pete Carroll 73. There we go. But in any way, does that say negative about Ryan Day? That hey, your guys that have been with you now and the relationship you have with Kelly, that they're there for the year and then he's bailing. And then the other guy is leaving for your basically one of your biggest rivals. Like, does that in any way paint that picture?
I don't think it paints a picture. I think we would have to sit and go, hey, let me ask myself a question. $6 million to do the same job. $6 million. Like, listen, if it was a lateral move, Brent, I'd be all for it. Like, I would understand it. But this dude went from making a couple million dollars a year to making $6 million a year to making it. Now you just coach ball plays. You don't have to worry about all the transfer portals, who's going to be here, who's not going to be here. Very clearly defined. That makes a lot of sense. Jim Knowles got three plus a year. Like, that is silly for a coordinator. That's double what he was making at Ohio State, right? Almost double what he was making at Ohio State. So I think because of the pay raises, it doesn't say that to me. But here's what it does. Here's what I do know. Ohio State had the best 1-2 punch OC-DC in all of college football.
Yep.
And these next steps are going to be big for them because, yes, they have talent. That's fine. Ohio State's defense had talent for a number of years, and they sucked, and they were a big problem. And brought in Jim Knowles, and that sucker fixed it like crazy. And the scheme versatility that he had was really, really cool. Again, a lot of guys came in to play with him. You wouldn't be surprised if some people put their name in the transfer portal because that's the way it goes, man. It's a relationship business. So I wouldn't be surprised if some people went to Penn State. Because that's the way it kind of works. But, I mean,
you can't
overstate that enough of how big of a loss these two are.
Yeah, because – and for Ryan Day, hey, that's the business of winning championships. You're going to lose your coordinators when you start
Nick Saban world. Welcome to the Kirby Smart world, who Dan Lanning, Todd Monken, Fran Brown, like just last year, like constantly replacing people. Nick Saban every year, dude. It was like Lane Kiffin, Sark. Like, I mean, my gosh, you passed through Charlie Strong and all these revamped head coaches were always there and, you know, kind of rehabbing them. And this is absolutely a part of success. Success breeds promotion. And then you've got to be like, first of all, I think what you found with most staffs that are really, really good is you have that next guy in the wings. Like, if you're on top of it, and there's no way to be on top of it completely, but like, you want as many minds in the room a la Todd Monken, Buster Faulkner, and Mike Bobo. Like, yep. Three elite guys. How about Dan Lanning, Kirby Smart, Muschamp, and Glenn Schumann? And then Lanning leaves, and you got Schumann you can promote still with other defensive minds. Like, do y'all understand how easy that is to game plan when you've got multiple people that's what they've done? They know how to do that, man. Like, they know the lingo. Okay, you take the run game. Okay, I'll take the passes. Yeah. Okay, what are you seeing? What am I seeing? Like, what have you done in the past to attack too high? What have you done? Like, all these things and all these questions, man. It's just, it makes life easy. It just really, really helps helps you. So I'm interested because this will dictate a lot. This is a lot of reason why I thought Ohio State could win it last year, because it wasn't just the talent. It was the coaches were elite on both sides of the football, and now both are gone.
Yeah, and it has happened before. I think in 2014 when Ohio State won it, they had to replace OC QB, Bama when they lost Sark and Mac Jones, and then Clemson kind of in a way with Trevor Lawrence and some others. Yeah, so speaking of OCs, though, and speaking of Alabama, Ryan Grubb kind of, I guess, comes back. I don't really know if that classifies because he was kind of there for a minute and then went to Seattle. With the Seahawks and is now back.
I think he was there because of to get people there and then left. Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of a weird, it was there for a few minutes, enough to get some gear and some swag. And then he went to Seattle or stayed in Seattle with the Seahawks and now is back with Kalen DeBoer at Alabama as offensive coordinator. Tough job.
Tough job, tough life. Nick Sheridan, by the way, kind of like, hey, you know, thanks for giving it the old college try. Like, I gave you one season. But, you know, it's interesting with me with this one because I think this is great for Alabama. Like, I think this is really, really good for Alabama. I think Kalen DeBoer is an elite offensive mind. I think Kalen DeBoer, when he had success all through his run, he's always had his buddy, like Ryan Grubb. And here's why that's important. Kalen DeBoer's personality is very chill. Kalen DeBoer is not the rah-rah guy. He's not the get-in-your-shorts guy. Like, it is very important. If I'm not that guy, Brent, I have to have guys on my staff that do that. And
yeah,
Ryan Grubb can do that. And that's what I think is important. Another offensive mind. I think the system they ran last year, I don't think Jalen Milroe was a fit. I think Jalen Milroe was exciting, electric, dynamic, really fun, but that's not really the quarterback style that you've seen from Grubb and you've seen from DeBoer. You know, he had Penix that was somewhat of an athlete, but that's about ball out of hand, making reads, making throws. I think this is a really good thing for Alabama. If I was Alabama, I'd be jacked up. I'd be excited. Again, we just talked about bringing on the more minds. If Sheridan's going to stay on, which that's a
looks
good
that
thing
way.
If you can do that, that's a great thing. You keep him on board. You bring in another offensive mind, man. There's no way that's bad. And I think y'all are going to be shocked by Alabama's offense this year. I think it'll be night and day better because I think the pieces are probably going to fit a little bit better with DeBoer's style, with Grubb's style of offense than it did with Milroe, even though he was, you know, one of the freakiest players in college football.
And former O-line coach Grubb as well. Next up, in terms of topics, I don't know if you saw this because you were getting another dub on the basketball court as a coach today. But interestingly, Georgia, there was a new bill introduced in this state that would potentially exempt NIL compensation from state income taxes. So,
wow.
Much like Texas, Florida, and Tennessee do not have state income taxes. It was a very interesting to read responses and thoughts about.
So did you read the whole thing?
No, I did not. I saw this sort of announcement, but I did see it's like one end of the spectrum is, all right, now we, you know, helps in recruiting. And then the other end of the spectrum is the human element of, oh, okay, so
I have to pay taxes, you know, and you don't.
Like, kid doesn't have to play because he plays sports. And
that's an interesting element. That's an interesting element. I'll say this. When I got drafted in the NFL in 2005, I made sure I bought a place in Florida and claimed residence in Florida because my signing bonus was going to go 12% to Ohio. I was like, nah, bro, Florida resident. So the benefits are great. Living in those states, like I can tell you as a professional athlete, like that's a huge feather in the cap to be able to say, we're not taking X out. So look how much more you make over the long haul. Same difference for these kids and their taxes. So obviously huge win for players, for those, especially
it's for those who introduced. Taxes. So it's not definitely a thing yet, but it's one of those words like would be shocked that they're, but that's kind of also a today's story or today in the college football is crazy world.
Yeah.
That it wouldn't, I don't think that exists if football and things that go with it there don't exist. Okay. So last thing we're going to get into today is something we're going to do, try to do weekly, as best we can. And that is sort of state of the program. And we didn't pick Ohio State, even though they are at the top, because as we just talked about, they got to replace both coordinators. So they have some change and some things that go with that. So first team we're going to look at is the GBO. I see is the hashtag Go Big Orange. Maybe I guess is what it is. The Tennessee Volunteers, who were 10-3 last year, got the dub against Bama at home, lost at Arkansas, lost at Georgia, and then lost in the college football playoff at Ohio State, 42-17. Josh Heupel is now 37-15 in his 4 years. At Tennessee, and 20-12 in the SEC, 11 wins, 9 wins, 10 wins last 3 seasons. So I'll kind of start there.
Hold on. You started there. I'm going to ask you a question because you are kind of a Heupel fan, but not really, right? Like you want to explain your position so I don't misrepresent it maybe?
So my position is that he needs to evolve his offense and help his quarterback a lot more so than he does. That was going to be one of my big questions for later, but I guess we can kind of get to it now. Do you think it's a ceiling? Like he's kind of hit where he's going to get to at Tennessee based upon what you've seen.
First off, to answer that question, Tennessee fans, I want you to do a nice little exercise. Let's go ahead and close our eyes and let's go ahead and go back to what we had. Because Tennessee sucked for a long time. Like, let's not forget. I see some people are upset. Like, 10-3, did we reach our ceiling? What are we talking about? You do realize I got the records right here, Brent.
Okay.
The last time Tennessee won 10 games, Brent, 2007.
Before Heupel.
Heupel's done it 2 out of his 3 years. His other win was 9. Like,
yep.
2007. Like, where was Brent Rollins in 2007? For gosh sakes, like
grad school.
That's almost 20 years ago. Like, I just want Tennessee fans to appreciate like the job he's done, and to put that in perspective, because it was like I'm looking like 7 wins, 3 wins, 8 wins, 5, 4, 9, 9, 7, 5, 5. I mean, he go to a bowl game for a ton of these years. Like they were atrocious. So he's got you going back in the right direction. Like the Tennessee excitement is back. You watch games, that Alabama game, like so thrilling, exciting. The atmosphere is back. They are 100% in the recruiting mix now. Like the NIL world, they're in it. Remember, they were one of the few to do the stadium tickets percentage to go to NIL. And like, so I first of all, I want to iron that out. Like Tennessee's going in the right direction. So I get frustration. Here's another thought. If Tennessee doesn't have Ohio State first, maybe they make more noise in the playoffs. But
yeah,
they got the unfortunate nature to get the champ who kicked the crap out of everybody and was really pissed off that day, because that was fresh off Michigan.
Yes.
And 3+ weeks of you suck. Ohio State's overrated. And they came out and they just pantsed Tennessee, and they were pissed, but they would have pantsed anybody in the country. So when I look at Tennessee, I think Heupel's done a good job. The most impressive part this past year had nothing to do with their offense. Like watching them this year was they developed so much depth on that defensive line. And I'm like, where did these guys come from? I knew Pierce, like everybody saw Pierce for last year and where he was, but like, you just start turning on the tape and you're like, man, how do you have all these guys, these 300 pounders that penetrate, you know, make noise. And I'm impressed with the development of the defense. And I trust the defense because I think they have to get better at linebacker. I think they have to get better at safety. I think they're just going to bring in more talented guys than they had like day one. Like those guys are going to be way more talented. So I just think that I wanted to put that out there before we get going is like, let's realize Tennessee, he has done wonders with your squad. And that thing is, he's averaging over 10 wins a season. And that is something that you've won 10 games in
last 3 years. Yep.
The last
11, 9, 10.
Yeah. And before that, 2007 was the last time. And the last time before that was 2004. So that's really good production from your head coach. So you got to give Heupel a lot of credit.
Very much so. In terms of, you talked about the losses. So Pierce to the pros, Omar Norman Lott, 55, Dylan Baller. Sampson, Cooper Mays that had played there for a good while and started multiple years, Dante Thornton, and then Brew McCoy. So the receiver room, and actually they had lost a lot in the portal from the depth perspective in the receiver room. But
can we start there? Can we start there, Brent? Because every Tennessee fan, if I'm watching these guys go out the door at receiver, I'm not upset. I'm not. Like, if I'm watching them week after week, Brent, one of the things that I thought they were missing is, like, big-time receivers. Like, consistent drops. The speed that they once had there was not there. And that's a system that is based on space and speed. Like, you have to have speed to get those advantages that you're trying to get. It's space, speed, and tempo, right? Like, it's really spreading you out to take advantage. And I didn't think they had a guy consistently that beat defenses. And sometimes they beat him and they drop it. And listen, Nico had his misses. I'm not hanging all that. Like, Nico was not elite by any stretch this season. But I do think Nico's scratching the surface of what he's going to be. I don't think we see a worse version of Nico coming back next year. Now, do you agree with that first before we go on to the next part of it?
A lot of it depends on one of the big sort of question marks for me from them offensively, and that's from the offensive line perspective, because it wasn't great. And then like, if you had Lance Hurd, who transferred in and played left tackle and was one of the lowest graded left tackles in the SEC, struggled but played a lot and got a good bit there. But you look at any sort of
best guy,
right? And you look at any sort of depth chart now for them, who's going to play right tackle? It's the person that gets looked at is the incoming top 10 recruit, David Sanders. But that's still true freshman in the SEC. That usually doesn't bode well along the offensive line unless you're talking, you know, elite of elite type player. And even guys like Andrew Thomas and others struggled as freshmen. So, you know, they did get Wendell Moe from Arizona, Sam Pendleton from Notre Dame along the offensive line in the portal. But that's a big question for me, is the combination of evolution of the offense and then offensive line play. Because I think if you get those a little bit, I think the talent of Nico then is allowed to shine more so.
Yeah. And this is the modern world too, by the way. You're spending a lot of money on Nico. And when you spend a lot of money on a quarterback, that was very well publicized about Nico and his contract. Like, where do you spend the other funds? Like, it's kind of like a salary cap. You only have so much money to spend. And best part of their offense by far was Dylan Sampson. Like,
yes,
best running back in Tennessee history. I would argue just not having him down the stretch obviously killed him against Ohio State. But like, Brent, me and you watch tape and we watch that offensive line that was very average. And you watch a guy like Dylan Sampson who consistently got yards that weren't there. Like,
yes.
They weren't there, fellas. Like, there was not holes to run through, but he did such a great job of staying square, finishing, and always fell forward and broke tackles and then got better and got stronger and continued. And here's the thing about Tennessee's offense that I think is, it's not an offense that's built to beat you in the first quarter. Like, if you watch them, those gains are going to be three yards, but you got to keep running it because that tempo, they like to run fat. Now, listen, they slowed it down last year because their defense was their best part of their team, but they like to run some plays and get that tempo going to get you a little bit tired. And now you're fatigued and you've those 3 yard runs turn into five, those 5 yard runs turn into seven. And so that's how kind of how they do their offense. But you're absolutely right. Like the offensive line the year before when they were really, really good, you know, that right tackle got drafted, right? Like he was a high draft pick. And yeah, and they're going to have to find, you know, more guys like that and then more receivers that they had out wide when they had Tillman and Hyatt and those guys that are – they're playing on Sundays. They're playing on Sundays. They had speed. They had size. Like they could make plays. And so how do they address those things will be critical on them moving forward.
Yeah, Darnell Wright was the one that got drafted early. That was a mistake by me. Portal, in terms of other things with the portal, they kept Mike Matthews, I think, at the receiver position, not a Parkview. The kid out of Parkview in Georgia Panthers, was big maybe. For them. But one thing that hurt them that didn't even have anything to do with football was Jermaud McCoy tearing his ACL in a workout. Now, granted, everything I've read says, hey, he's
– a lot of time.
On track, or you know, but he's already had surgery and they think he's gonna be back. But that's one, like, he's playing corner, and granted, he was one of the best corners in the country,
dude. He was so good,
but
I don't think people realize how good that sucker was. I mean, he was every time you turned on the tape, you knew where number three was. Like, he was because what do we hear about this season coming into the year? We're like, Tennessee's front seven is gonna be pretty good. Now, I guilty. Never thought they were gonna be that good. Like, they were freaking unreal. Like, I was blown away. We were all blown away watching the tape. We were like, holy cow, like Tennessee's elite up front, but the secondary was supposed to be a big weakness. And could they stop them enough where they didn't take advantage of that and get the ball out and make plays? And three made plays over and over again. Interception against Bama in the end zone, right? Like, I could think about so many plays throughout the season. He came up big for them.
That's one where I think you might like the spring portal window for them. Try to find some corner, some corner depth if they don't like what they have there. I've seen some stuff where they're talking about Boo Carter, who was a really good freshman, playing some on offense potentially. So a little bit of that stuff there. Recruiting wise, well, since I work for Rivals, obviously I'll go with theirs. Team rank, they were 12th in the country, but only 8th in the SEC, which is how that kind of works.
People don't understand that, like. 12th in the country is awesome, but you're 8th in your own league. Like that is mind blowing. Like, it sounds great that we're in the top 12, but like to think I'm behind 7 other teams in my league that I'm going to have to play at least 4 of them, probably, you know, maybe more every single year. That's a crazy world, man.
So in terms of the offensive part with the evolution of the offense, you've got Kitzelman and then Ethan Davis, who was also, I think, a kid from Georgia, Collins Hill maybe, but they also signed a top 40, top 50 player, kid out of Kansas, tight end, 6'6" tight end. So now that's three like highly recruit or good player / highly recruited kids at the tight end spot. I think that's where, can you get to some true 12, a lot of 12 personnel? Can you get to maybe some play action bootleg type game with Nico because of his legs versus, and the reason I say all this stuff is, for example, like there's a lot of, I know a lot of people within the Ohio State realms, especially a lot of people that study and write and look at Ohio State. And they ask me, hey, prior to the game, what about the Tennessee offense? I'm watching the tape and there's certain things of it that seem very predictable. And I'm like, yes, there are a multitude of elements in their offense that are very predictable. And I got multiple messages after that game where it's like, okay, you were spot on. There are certain things that I knew exactly what Ohio State would do and what Tennessee and or Ohio State would do with it. That's the part for me where you've got to get out of that level of predictability within some of his offensive stuff. And I think the tight ends and the talent they have in the tight end room is a way to do that.
Yeah, and if you watch their offense, Brent, like they start to incorporate tight ends when they get more in the red. Like they do a good – and I think they do a good job with that. They get more – creative because, again, their offense spreads you out sideline to sideline so much, you open up the middle of the field. And those tight end guys are, you know, the ability to have them as a sniffer and insert them into different gaps, but also slip gaps and get, you know, to the next level and find some open space. You know, having a big target for Nico would be good. I mean, you listen, I don't care if it's tight ends or receivers, the weapons have to be better. They have to be better for Nico. Like, and Nico has to be better. Like,
yes,
both of those things. Like, you hired Heupel for his offense. They were number two, I think, in the SEC in defense last year, period. But your offensive side of the football 100% has to evolve, has to grow, has to get better. You can't, and here's probably the most alarming thing if I'm a Tennessee fan. I felt like watching the tape too, Brent, and tell me if you feel the same way. I also felt like he didn't trust Nico. Like, I thought there were times that he was like, dude, I'm not going to screw this up. My defense is really, really good. I trust them. I'm going to make
especially early.
I'm going to hand the football off. And that's crazy to think about, that a guy with that talent, so highly recruited, obviously, that you kind of are nervous with him and you don't trust him to really let it rip. But again, next year in the system,
grew.
It did.
And we saw, like we saw with Hooker in year two. Now, obviously, they had, you know, Jalen Hyatt and Tillman at receiver, but Hooker in year two was a completely different animal. And the decision-making, the ability to limit turnover type plays, that sort of thing. Now, the most interesting part is what's on the screen for them, because their schedule, they open up with Coach Fran Brown and the other orange, Syracuse, in the ATL, in the Benz. On August the 30th.
How thankful are they that Kyle McCord is gone?
Amazing that you would say that, but yes, that is true.
Syracuse has to play
him and Jackson Meeks. They got to replace some weapons on offense. The running back, it's really good. So, yeah. But then you got – so Georgia is the third game, which is
– That's way early. That's not
very
normal. Usually you play them later in the season.
Yeah, they flipped them in Florida. And then you've got at Bama and then at Florida later in the year. Those are kind of the four, what I would say, determine your season type games. Determine your playoff and potential fate. And by the way, that Syracuse game is now a ginormous game for them because of the other parts of their schedule and where you can't trip up in the SEC. Because you're playing basically the same schedule you played a year ago. It's just flipping home and away.
Well, the good thing about their schedule a year ago is it wasn't that tough. Like, it was pretty favorable. And next year, Florida's going to be better. We saw that. Like, we absolutely, Florida's going to be better. But you didn't throw in ETSU and UAB. And, you know, listen, Vandy ain't nothing to slouch out. Obviously, that game was pretty competitive, you know, last year. But you got Georgia. You got Bama. Those are huge deals. You'll take Mississippi State. You'll take Arkansas. Those are good matchups to have in the SEC. Kentucky is a good matchup. Oklahoma will be very interesting to see what they are next year. I mean, we don't know what that is. And obviously, New Mexico State ain't setting the world on fire. Like, so the schedule.
Well, Oklahoma is probably one that I even could have thrown in there, because now with Mateer, and if they have an offensive system that is
something. We know they'll have defense. We now absolutely, I can see Oklahoma taking a few steps. And this is the problem, man. This is the problem with the SEC and the way they recruit and the coaches that are really, really good and the depth of the league. It only takes Oklahoma getting a quarterback, and you better watch out. Like, you know what Texas is. You know what Georgia is. You know what Alabama is. Like, you know, with the upper echelon teams, Florida's got a quarterback. Like, Lagway is their dude. That changes every freaking thing. Like, so they got to play, you know, in Gainesville. Here's the thing, Brent. They easily could have lost to Florida last year. Easily. So you're going to have to get better. Florida's going to be better. So it's
and
not
they struggled
a
on the road.
Big
last
time
year.
Struggle
that
on the
was
road.
A thing. So
really, it was their defense.
All right. So we'll finish up with something that Wes and I cooked up in terms of terms. All right. So if we're looking at Tennessee next year and we're talking about them as a potential playoff team and they're cooking, that we're going to go cooking versus cooked.
Okay.
Or cooking. Don't add the G. I don't know, however you want to term that. So if they're cooking next year, why is that? What's the reason?
If they're cooking next year, they took the next step. because the talent is undeniable. Like, we've seen him do – his debut was one of the best debuts I've ever seen. Like, it was incredible. So, I think, you know, Josh Heupel found him, identified him, you know, obviously spent a lot of resources. Games moving forward. I think he took that next step. I think their defense is going to be good, Brent. I don't think it's going to be as good as it was this year, but I think what I saw –
Did he freeze up? Looks like he froze up. Are you still there?
And a guy that
okay,
and
a guy there that you we are.
Can trust on. Yeah,
you froze like up Nico, for a second.
Sorry. I don't know how I freeze. Great internet that pisses me off. But so to me, Nico has to take that next step. Be in the conversation for all SEC, and be a guy that is in the conversation for you know, a great quarterback across college football.
All right, so. That's if they're cooking, that's the reason. If they're cooked and they're looking at single digit wins, non-playoffs, that sort of realm, what do you think it is?
I think their offensive line is the same as it was this year. It's not very good, and their defense took a step backwards because their defense kept them in games. Their defense won a lot of football games for them a year ago. So I think if their defense returns to what we saw the last couple years before this season, then they'll be in trouble. Like that's got to stay not at a, you know, the super elite level, but it's got to be at a high level.
Offensive line struggles was what I wrote down. In the end, do you think they are a playoff team next year?
Man, I feel like I did about them this year. Like I feel like they're going to be one of those teams that are in the mix. I very much feel like the hardest part is always like you don't know what you don't know about the other conferences and how many teams they're going to get in. But I feel pretty confident with that schedule that Tennessee, they're going to beat the teams they should, most of the teams they should, and then they're going to lose. They're going to stumble once or twice. And if you stumble twice and you have a big win or two and you're not in the SEC championship game, you can do just what you did this year and get in the college football playoff. So I absolutely think they're one of the top, you know, 15 contenders to get into a playoff spot. Do you, sir?
Yeah, I do. And especially for the fact they get Georgia home early. I think that matters. Breaking in a new quarterback for Georgia. It's not like you're halfway through the season, you got your guy and you're confident, that sort of thing. I think getting them at home early is a big time sort of potential win for them.
At Bama, at Florida. Are tough.
Oklahoma. I think they can get to where. So if you said, hey, Syracuse, Georgia, Alabama, even Arkansas at home is not necessarily the greatest thing, but Syracuse, Georgia, Alabama, Oklahoma, Florida, and you get three of those games, you know, and you're 10-2 again, you're in the playoff. You got to get three of those and not trip up anywhere else. That's what got them. Arkansas got them last year. So we'll see. Yeah, but
what's crazy is last year we were discussing three lost teams. So
yeah,
at the end of the season, that was very much in the conversation. Like Tennessee wasn't even a debate, which is crazy. They weren't even talked about. Like they were guaranteed to be in. And I think with Nico coming back and another year in the system, I mean, Tennessee fans can expect 10 wins from Heupel because that's what he does. And you 10 wins, you're right there in the mix, ready to compete for a national championship. And again, if they played SMU first round or had a different draw, like they could have been a team that won a playoff game. You know what I'm saying? Like they could have done that a year ago. Like that, it's just they played Ohio State.
So those of you that are listening to this maybe later or now, either or, hit us up in the comments about who you want us to look at next week. Thursday, we got something a little bit different planned for Thursday. We'll see about that. So keep talking about each of these teams each and every week and different one, really looking at big picture, everything, and then where they're at moving forward. You got anything else before we leave here? You know, since it is your show. I mean, your name's on it.
You crushed it. No, I love that, Mr. Announcer guy. We're letting you do this from now on. It was beautiful, baby. Signing off. Hit like, subscribe, hit the button, whatever that is, that thing you're supposed to do.
Thumbs up.